This podcast was recorded Thursday, August 31st at 10:35 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Like the redistricting process, which is about to restart, will be conducted completely in public and be conducted completely without controversy. We shall see. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians now drawing another set of legislative maps. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, wordsmithing the ballot language for November's election comes with, alas, controversy. But first, Ohio Democrats and Ohio progressives remain undefeated. They have not lost an election since they decisively turned back conservatives and Republicans who wanted to make it harder to change the Ohio Constitution and make it harder to pass an abortion rights amendment. Ohio Democrats have not lost in 23 days. Of course, we have not had an election in that time. But the recent success has some wondering if Ohio is turning back towards the center, getting a little more bluer. I guess this week says, no. And he knows Ohio. Kyle Kondik is the managing editor of Sabato's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia's Center for Politics. He is an Ohio University grad. He worked for newspapers in Northeast Ohio, worked for former Attorney General Richard Cordray, and wrote a book on Ohio's presidential voting history called The Bellwether. Kyle, welcome back to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me.
The headline in your piece in Politico this week is, "No, Ohio is not in play." Who thinks it's in play? Is there hope in Washington that Ohio could be a player in next year's presidential election?
There's been some reporting that, you know, the Biden campaign was maybe giving the state another look after the issue one vote. And, you know, I think you could also argue that a lot of the sort of economic program for the Biden administration in terms of industrial policy and trying to prioritize domestic manufacturing, that sort of thing, you know, that's a message I think you could say is targeted at Ohio, although it's probably targeted much more broadly than Ohio, you know, probably targeted across the kind of broader industrial North region and probably more so for, you know, Pennsylvania, Michigan and Wisconsin, which, you know, unlike Ohio these days, those three states vote, you know, right near the center of the national electorate. You know, in the Trump era, Ohio has definitely moved away from that place at the center of the electorate and moved more toward Republicans. And that's just what I was trying to convey in the piece, is that the issue one vote, while certainly a great outcome for the left in Ohio, you know, winning that by 14 points, you know, ballot issues can be wildly different than partisan results. And I think the partisan results are a better guide as to where the state actually is. And it's a, you know, it's a Republican leaning state at this point.
Yeah, let's get into that. You're right. Issues are not partisan elections. And the August election, though, was seen as a proxy vote on the abortion rights issue, an issue that tends to separate Democrats from Republicans. Why wasn't the August vote a partisan election?
Well, look, I mean, we know, and I just, you know this from the results themselves and just in talking to some people before and after the election, we're tracking these things that, you know, we knew that Democrats were almost uniformly opposed to issue one, that the issue was having trouble with independents, and also that there was a block of Republican voters who were not going to take the Republican position on that issue. And I think you may very well see a similar kind of alignment in the abortion vote that comes up in November, because the sort of mainline mainstream Republican position on abortion rights and the mainstream Democratic position on abortion rights, you know, a majority of the public is just closer to the Democrats on that. So when you actually see the issue on the ballot, you know, the Democrats can have an advantage on these things. But, you know, when people put their partisan jerseys on in presidential elections, you know, coming up next year, it's a different story. You just expect a lot more party unity. You know, the Republicans just have some advantages in the electorate that can be minimized in a, you know, in a nonpartisan or, you know, race. I mean, you know, thing we've seen in Ohio recently is that the Democrats had some success in some of the state Supreme Court elections, in part because those races were, you know, they're nominated in partisan primaries, but not, they didn't have the party label on the ballot. Well, Republicans put the party label on the ballot, and so, you know, they, unsurprisingly, did pretty well in 2022 in those races. So party label, of course, means a lot. And, you know, particularly in a state like Ohio that is, you know, leaning Republican overall.
Yeah. And you point to Missouri, which supported a minimum wage amendment, but reelected Josh Hawley, two very different sides of the political spectrum. Kentucky as well supported abortion rights, but then reelected Rand Paul.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, and you know, there's this sort of broader kind of, it's almost like a cliche or in sort of political science about how like Americans can be sort of symbolically conservative, but they can be kind of liberal on specific kinds of issues. And, you know, you do see that in some of the things that Democrats support, like, you know, abortion rights and minimum wage increases and those sorts of things. Those kinds of ballot issues, when they do get on statewide ballots, can do quite well, and they can do better than Democrats themselves do. You know, you think back to, you know, one of the last really big kind of off-year ballot issue fights in Ohio was the repeal of the limitations on public sector unions that the Republicans passed after John Kasich got elected in 2011. And that got smacked down too. Now, the Democrats did come back and do well in the 2012 presidential and Senate elections the following year. But, you know, it certainly didn't prevent Ohio from becoming much more Republican over time, based on, you know, the sort of broader Trump realignment in the industrial north.
Yeah, a lot of people give credit to that organization effort in 2011, which helped President Obama win Ohio again. And Ohio was pretty crucial that year in him securing reelection. Also, Sherrod Brown was on the ballot that year. You don't think the issue one campaign and then this coming, the new issue one, because it's also issue one, the abortion rights amendment, could help Democrats get organized a little bit better ahead of next year?
You know, I'm not going to say it wouldn't help. It's just that I don't think we should expect the state to suddenly become really competitive again, you know, in light of what happened. And again, I could sort of see the narrative kind of setting up here in that, you know, I think the abortion issue is likelier than not to pass. I mean, we'll see how that fight goes. You've also got this marijuana ballot issue that could also end up passing. I'm just a little less unclear on that. But even if those things pass, but you could sort of see if they do, there could be this sort of broader conversation about, oh, well, you know, Ohio's really trending toward the Democrats. And I just don't think that those sorts of ballot issues are good predictors for, you know, for sort of partisan races moving forward. I don't think it's like impossible that the Democrats could carry Ohio for president and Sherrod Brown get reelected. It's just that if that was happening, it would probably be part of a broader, you know, smashing reelection victory for Joe Biden, which again is within the realm of possibility, but we're in an era very close to competitive presidential elections. And I'm sort of, my default position is the next one's going to be close too. And if that's the case, you'd expect Ohio to continue to vote, you know, several points more Republican than the nation, just like it did in 2016 and 2020. Yeah.
You know, getting to this, you know, candidates versus issues, you know, Republicans and conservatives who oppose abortion rights, they point to Governor DeWine, who has been a lifelong opponent to abortion rights, very outspoken opponent of abortion. He won in a landslide in 2022, and they say Ohio, because of that, is firmly in the camp of opposing abortion rights, but the polling doesn't show that. So there's a separation between the candidate and the party and the issue there.
Yeah, look, when people are considering voting for candidates, I think there are a lot of different things that go into it. And even though I think DeWine's position on abortion rights is probably not where the majority of Ohioans are, I guess we're going to find out in this vote coming up in November. I think he generated a lot of goodwill based on how he had handled COVID. I think the fact that DeWine, I think, became sort of broadly acceptable to Republicans. I mean, there were a lot of Republicans who voted against him in the primary. But you know, those folks came home, and, you know, DeWine also had a tremendous resource advantage over his Democratic opponent. And I think that played into it too. So, you know, governor's races too, sometimes they end up getting out of hand, and like, you know, the DeWine reelection makes Ohio seem more Republican than it actually is, I think. You know, I think presidential results are probably your best sort of barometer as to kind of the overall partisan lean of a state. And again, Ohio was just more competitive before Trump came along than it is.
Yeah, DeWine built up a lot of goodwill on how he handled COVID, especially in the early days. I think a lot of independents and even some more moderate, perhaps even conservative Democrats voted for him because of the way, especially in the first few months of the COVID pandemic, he was out front and seemed to be bucking the political winds to try to keep people safe during that pandemic. And that certainly built up a lot of goodwill for him. He's a likable.
The same thing that cost him votes in the primary probably added votes in the general. So he didn't do that great in the primary. He still it wasn't particularly close, but there were a lot of I think he got a little under 50% in the primary. Yeah. But you know that sort of you know problems within his own party, I think actually kind of translated to a lot of strength in the general election because he got over 60% of the vote.
Yeah, he's a likable guy. I mean, he really is. Even people who don't like his politics like him personally, I think. So the two big questions. We'll start with the biggest. Does this Ohio being firmly in the Republican camp for presidential politics, does it last beyond Donald Trump? Because at some point, Donald Trump will disappear from the stage. Is this a Trump-fueled shift to the right, or is this a permanent Republican shift to the right for Ohio?
I think it's probably some of both. I think that Trump was an unusually strong candidate for white working class Ohioans, some of whom had, legacy loyalty to the Democratic Party. I think you particularly see that in Eastern Appalachian Ohio, going south from like Warren and Youngstown all the way down the state's eastern and southern border. And I think, part of the reason why Republicans have been so basically slavishly devoted to Trump is I think there is some worry within the party that if they turn their backs on Trump, that they'll have a turnout problem, much the same way you could argue that Mitt Romney had kind of a turnout problem in certain places that probably was part of the reason why Obama was able to carry Ohio in 2012. I guess, you could say, oh, well, maybe Republicans could regain some support in the suburbs if Trump is gone, and maybe that's the case. Maybe they also have turnout problems. But I think that a lot of people who shifted toward the Republicans over the past decade, I don't think they're necessarily coming back for Democrats. I think if the next kind of winning coalition for Democrats in Ohio probably is going to look different than what came before. The issue one vote, I think, again, is like this like wildly optimistic best case scenario for Democrats. But I do think it showed maybe a glimpse of what a future winning Democratic map could look like because, the Democrats did so well in the sort of what I call these collar counties around the three big urban counties, many of which are deeply Republican at the presidential level and got more Republican in the Trump era. But, you would need to see, like, for instance, in central Ohio, like Delaware County is, northern Columbus suburbs and exurbs. It is by far the most highly educated county in the state in terms of four-year college attainment. And that kind of demographic group has been moving toward the Democrats. Delaware was pretty firmly on the Democratic side in this recent ballot issue, but it's still a Republican county in statewide races. It needs to become a Democratic county in order for Democrats to sort of make the math work statewide. And that hasn't happened yet. So, there's this trade-off in the electorate going on. It's part of what I tried to show in the Politico piece is that, these trade-offs have been good for Democrats in some places, particularly places that are like very diverse and places that have pretty high four-year college attainment. So like Metro Atlanta, Northern Virginia, Phoenix area, certain parts of Texas that have gotten less Republican over time. But the flip side of that is that, a lot of places that maybe used to be more open to voting Democratic that are kind of more white working class. And so like the Mahoning Valley is a great example of that kind of place. A lot of those places have gone hard toward the Republicans in this era. And there are just more kinds of places like that in Ohio than there are places that are like Delaware County. And so that's just this basic math problem that Democrats have to fix in the state. And while issue one was encouraging, I think in that regard, I just don't think it translates to actual partisan elections.
Yeah. When you watch the big maps on election night and you see, as you mentioned, Phoenix and the suburbs of Phoenix going blue, Ohio would have to see that around Cincinnati, around Columbus, around Cleveland is pretty well, it has been, some of those suburbs have been either purple or blue at times, but Columbus and Cincinnati, those suburbs, Dayton, those suburb exurbs out there are still firmly red, even though they lean a little bit bluish when Trump's on the ballot or when there's an issue on the ballot.
Yeah, and even, you know, Northeast Ohio has definitely gotten a lot less Democratic. Yeah. You know, Cuyahoga County is still pretty overwhelmingly Democratic, but you know, Clinton and Biden did worse there than Obama had done. Part of that is losing some of the white working class vote. Also, you know, black turnout was not as robust under Clinton and Biden than it was under Obama, for fairly obvious reasons. But also, if you look at some of the counties that touch Cuyahoga County, like Lorain County to its west, you know, Lorain was a pretty reliably Democratic county and actually voted for Trump in 2020. You know, the same thing is true of you know, Mahoning, where Youngstown is. You know, used to be kind of an overwhelmingly Democratic county dating back to the days of the New Deal. You know, that finally, you know, went away in 2016. You could see, you know, there used to be kind of more Democratic places in Southeast Ohio, like Steubenville area, other places. You know, those places have sort of fallen off. They fell off even before Trump, and then they got super red with Trump. And so, you know, I think that there's just been a lot of bleeding for Democrats in kind of rural and small town areas across the state, and not enough gaining for Democrats in some of the places, you know, suburban and exurban places closer to the big city. So, you know, again, there's just a lot of work to do for Democrats in the state to sort of restore it to being, you know, a true presidential battleground.
And that's going to take candidates, because honestly, the Mahoning Valley, it really hasn't changed from when, I mean, they've lost jobs progressively over the decades. And Trump didn't bring back the jobs. He didn't bring back coal. He didn't bring back the steel mills. And they haven't come back under President Biden. But you need a candidate who can light a fire under those Democratic voters or those independent voters. And Ohio has not had that candidate. Sherrod Brown is on the ballot this election, next year. He's the only one who has seen statewide success here in quite some time, consistent statewide success.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think that, you know, Brown has the potential to run ahead of the presidential nominee in Ohio, and he's going to have to, because in all likelihood, the state's going to vote Republican for president again, probably by several points. And so he's going to need some crossover votes. So can he, you know, win back some, or, you know, keep some of the people who have voted for Trump but also voted for him? You know, some of the places where Brown ran the furthest in 2018, ran the furthest ahead of Hillary Clinton in 2016, were in Eastern Ohio. And, you know, he probably has a lot of room to fall in that part of the state, given how Republican it's become otherwise. And so, you know, the Republicans have these three really attractive Senate targets in Republican-leaning presidential states, you know, Joe Manchin in West Virginia, John Tester in Montana, and Sherrod Brown in Ohio. And there are only five of the 100 senators now who represent states that their party did not win for president in 2020. And those, all three of those Democratic seats are on the ballot in 2024. Wow. So it's just a real big challenge for Brown, even though I think it's reasonable to think he will do better than the Democratic presidential nominee. But how much better? How much better does he need to do? You know, that's the open question.
And then, you know, all the wild cards, the legal proceedings against Donald Trump, if he gets indicted or even convicted, and does it eventually lead to his losing some cachet and some pull in some of these states? It's a lot to unpack, and we'll have to see how it turns out. Kyle Kondik, managing editor of Sapatow's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Thanks for joining us here on Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back.
Want to learn how to be a master of business without going back to school? Listen to the Planet Money MBA. No suits, no PowerPoints, just the secrets of business school delivered straight to your ears. Every Wednesday till Labor Day on Planet Money from NPR.
Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the past 7 days. This week, we give it to Republicans on the Ohio ballot board, led by Secretary of State Frank LaRose. They took an editor's red pen to the ballot language on the abortion rights amendment, which will appear in November. The board approved language that emphasizes the word abortion, which certainly is more clear than the term reproductive medical treatment. That is definitely more clear, and they made that change. Voters are voting on abortion in November, make no mistake, whatever the language. The ballot board then substituted the word fetus with the term unborn child, which is a more loaded term, instead of the word fetus. They approved the word the term unborn child. The rewrite also included the line, "The amendment will always allow an unborn child to be aborted at any stage of the pregnancy, regardless of viability, if a doctor determines the mother's life or health is in danger." Also true, but certainly loaded. After all, Ohio's current, but on hold, 6-week abortion ban also allows an abortion at any stage if the mother's life is in danger. Democrats have appealed the edits to the Ohio Supreme Court, and let's just say this. It is unlikely that anyone who votes in November will be swayed by the ballot language. They might, but probably most people won't even read it, and an election in an odd year will bring out people who know the issues, and they are going to come into that voting booth having decided if they're going to vote yes or no on issue one. But for shrewdly using loaded terms in the ballot language, Republicans in the Ohio Ballot Board get our Snollygoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. We're part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a kind review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Just tell your friends about us. Spread the word. For our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, our student producer, Katie Genius, and our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.